Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles. Welcome to another episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. I'm Randy Strobel, your host for today, and I'm here with a really exceptional person, if I could say. We've got Tim Daly here from Exceptional Minds.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for the pun, Randy.
I'm sure they'll become all interview. So what is Exceptional Minds? Let's tell the folks at home.
So Exceptional Minds is a school for students on the autism spectrum to learn and study the digital arts. What our company does actually is we provide a complete pipeline for students. You can be as young as 14 years old, but you can be from that age and you can go into adult 35 years old, learn about the specific computer arts for the first time. And then what we do here is we have a three-year program that helps you develop a portfolio specifically in your chosen field of the digital arts, whether it be visual effects, 2D animation, 3D animation. We cover a wide variety of these digital arts. So somebody who's looking to get involved at Exceptional Minds for the first time, they might start off with us in some part-time workshops that are devoted to these specific areas to get a feel for them. And then they really enjoy explore even further in the full-time program that I just mentioned. During our full-time program, we offer career services support where we have dedicated industry partners that help students on the spectrum specifically secure jobs and internships. So while we can guarantee placement, our job as a company is to help these students specifically build their portfolios to the best degree that it can be in order to help them secure those opportunities out there. So these different types of opportunities. So you might have something like a mentorship, internship, some freelance work. And so we help the students develop those skills necessary to be competitive in that field. And even after they graduate, we still provide additional services. And we also have a dedicated animation studio where students can go and work on a freelance basis after they graduate, if their portfolio is showing these skills. Our company provides this huge opportunity for students on the autism spectrum to develop those skills and make a career out of it.
So I'm here in school, I'm here in workshops, I'm here in animation. I want to get into all of that, but I just want to talk a little bit about what is the autism spectrum.
So when we talk about students on the autism spectrum, we're talking about the terminology that we use today is somebody who's neurotypical versus somebody who's neurodivergent. So it's somebody who usually thinks about things in a different way or manner, and they take in sensory input maybe a little bit differently from somebody who's neurotypical. So a person on the autism spectrum might be more sensitive to like certain sounds, taste, touch, things of that nature. But something to remember about autism specifically is that it's a spectrum. So when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Some people are very lowly affected, need minimal support. Others need a lot more additional support. So the best way to find out what those supports are that they need is to just ask the individual. In viewing autism in this day and age, it's really still about learning what the individual needs are of the individual person and what the additional support is that they may need to help them so you can make those accommodations for them, whether it be in the classroom or in the workplace.
So you're doing some great work out there, and you're not just from Exceptional Minds. You're also a dean, right?
I am our academic dean.
Wow. Congratulations to you on that. Let's learn a little bit about the path that got you to be academic dean at Exceptional Minds. So starting at Grand Valley, what did your school experience look like for you then?
Yeah, I guess I'll just go through the life story, basically, from point A to point B. So I started off at Grand Valley as a freshman in 2004. I was in the film and video program. Initially, I wanted to study animation right away. And interestingly enough, while I was going through the program, I had a lot of great friends in the program. We would spend our nights and our weekends watching movies. And during my time at GVSU, I actually got more interested in the film production aspects. So I did a lot of the great things that GVSU is known for, like their summer film program. And what was funny about it is I'm going through the program and I'm like, I hate being on film set. It's like the morning. Go through that after a few years, and then I really start developing my skills in animation again. Some of my professors there were really encouraging. I remember having DM Morse as a professor. She was pretty encouraging towards me and my development in animation skills. So I graduated with my emphasis in animation, and then I just worked a few odd jobs for a few years. And after doing that for a few years, I was like, I really want to go back and pursue this a little bit further. So I ended up applying for graduate school, which led me to attend the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York, where I received my MFA. So I did that program, received a degree in digital arts. That program took me 3 years to complete. After that, I ended up working in the industry on a freelance basis. So I did a few odd jobs in New York, but eventually I decided, okay, LA is kind of a bigger pool, so let's go out there. Doesn't seem like it would be, but LA is where everything is centralized as far as the industry goes in America. So I went out there and I started doing visual effects work on a freelance basis in LA. And with my MFA, I started adjunct teaching on a freelance basis.
Were those odd jobs that you had in New York, was that freelance animation? Like, were you working?
It was as some motion graphics type work. So still in that same day. I was doing this for about a good 4 to 5 years when I first moved out to LA. And then I was looking for more teaching jobs. And I was like, it might be interesting to see what these students on the spectrum can do. So I applied for this place called Exceptional Minds. And I essentially was just kind of impressed looking at their work at the time, at the level of quality that the students could do specifically. So I applied, I interviewed for a role as a VFX instructor, actually, to begin with. And I was a VFX instructor with the company for 3 years. But at the same time, I was doing a lot of these managerial type tasks. And the dean at the time, her name was Kat Cutright, amazing mentor to me. She had me doing a lot of these type of overview management type roles. And so I was eventually promoted into our associate dean role. And then when she left, I basically took over this role of the academic dean. And what I always tell people about that is I really didn't go through an interview process where I had to prove or like, hey, I know this knowledge about this and blah, blah, blah about this. It's all about talking about what you know when you're essentially getting your foot in the door. And you're showing people that you can do it. So it's the walk the walk opposed to the talk in the talk. I eventually ended up in the academic dean role because I showed I could do all these tasks that were required at the company.
And I mean, talking about the animation work, that so these students are like actively doing animation work, right? And when you look at the video on your website, I mean, it's a reel of all of the biggest movies that have come out in the last couple of years. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what partnerships you have.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're seeing and you're reacting to is, I'll just say right off the bat, one of our biggest clients, if not our biggest client, is Marvel specifically. So they give us a lot of VFX freelance work. We do some visual effects post-production type work for them specifically. And what ends up happening with that is, like any other company that'll bid for shots, we'll go to a company and we'll take a certain amount in, and we do it on the basis of what our students are trained in. So then with the dedicated support of a studio supervisor, we work on producing these shots and giving them back to the client. So we've had this relationship going with them before I started at Exceptional Minds. So that relationship has been like 7 years plus specifically. Some other great clients that we work with are Nickelodeon, Paramount, Cartoon Network, Disney as a whole. The bigger companies that we really have those ongoing mentorship opportunities, internship opportunities going on that are available to the students. Depending on what it's like year after year, we'll see different opportunities come up for the students. So a few years ago, we had 2 internship opportunities from Mattel. Okay, Mattel's the toy company, right? So it's like thinking about, how are they related to the digital arts? Well, they had those type of positions related to what we do here in their wheelhouse. So they want ours to come in, and they hired one of the interns full time. So we do have those type of relationships as well.
I mean, and you've got some incredible stats for your graduation numbers are up in the 90s. You've got students going out to work. What advice do you have for the students listening to this? So Grand Valley students trying to work on some of those big movies that you've got relationships. What does the animation VFX industry look like for students coming out of college?
It's a pretty competitive industry, so my best advice that I can give is listen to your peers, your instructors, get that professional feedback, connect with industry professionals, do your networking on LinkedIn in order to get that feedback. When you're thinking about applying for these internships, these job opportunities on these websites, how do you get yourself this? That is always the catch-22. I would say more so the first job step is to really think about, hey, what is a company that I want to work for? do they do the type of work that I want to do? Start connecting with the people who already work at that company, talking to them over a continuous period of time. So talk to them, like form these relationships over several years if need be, so they know who you are specifically, because that's what it's all about. If someone recognizes who you are, then that pool ends up becoming a lot smaller and your chances become a lot more available.
So as we're talking about the work, right, what programs are you using? What skills are required? What does a day in the life of somebody who works on these shows and movies look like?
So we use the Adobe software in our program. Now, that's for beginner level and somebody who's learning the skills for the first time. Premiere is coming up on video editing, but as the student goes into more of the advanced animation programming, we'll learn things like Toon Boom Harmony and Storyboard Pro, because a lot of industry professionals use that in the animation industry. Maya is still a big one in 3D. Maya just seems to be in it for the long haul. So visual effects itself, this is hard to wrap your head around, but this is where a lot of my freelance opportunities came from. What is used is the program Nuke. So Nuke is a node-based software. So for those of you who are not familiar with what a node is specifically, opposed to a layer-based system like Photoshop where things are stacked on top of each other, nodes are basically boxes that connect into one another and help the program to do different types of functions. So that's the easiest way to describe it. That's the basis of Nuke. It takes a person a minute to usually learn how to use Nuke because of that. So when I first learned, it took me about 6 months to learn it. But I was self-taught in it. For those of you who are not familiar, because I know GVSU really didn't focus too heavily on visual effects per se, it did a little bit of the digital post-production, but let me just give you an example. Digital post-production in visual effects, you might be asked to track something. So when I say track something, that means the computer will lock onto a pixel or a series of pixels in the screen and create a pathway on that. So maybe it'll track my hand, right? And what that allows for is for something, a baseball, to move with my hand. So it looks like something is completely integrated into it. That's the visual effect. So there is that commonality that still exists, but learning to adapt to the different software may take you a little bit. Those are some of the tips and techniques that you can use to make yourself a little bit more competitive. It's doing, again, that stuff that not everybody knows, doing that stuff that you're okay to explore and you're willing to go. So you don't necessarily have to go down the coding route, although a lot of people can go that route. I've heard that too from plenty of industry partners. But if you're more of a visual person, there are other skills and techniques you can learn.
Wow. It felt like I just got a front row seat to that part of you being an educator there. That was a great explanation of how nodes and things work. Let's talk a little bit about you being an educator. There are some students right now who will become educators or who will get interested in that. There are some students right now who are in the film program looking to kind of do what you're doing and spread the knowledge about filmmaking to a new generation of students. What does being an educator look like for you?
Being an educator, you have the opportunity to come into a wonderful company like Exceptional Minds and kind of shadow somebody and learn from the techniques that they're doing specifically. A lot of the times, you'll be given the opportunity to educate in some way or form, like maybe on a smaller basis, and you kind of find your rhythm. This is the other funny story. The first adjunct teaching job that I ever had was a 3D character animation class. I had my MFA at the time. They needed an adjunct instructor, so I'm like, okay, that's not really the field of specialty. Even though this was an animation in graduate school character, I was more of an experimental animator opposed to a character animator, but I'm like, okay, I have enough skills to teach this. But first day of class, I'm like, how do I prepare for this? Okay, I'm going to write out this entire lecture and like read it verbatim. The reason I laugh is because I look back at that. Because of your nerves, you use some type of methodology like that to make yourself less nervous. But eventually you just have to go through the process of doing it again and again to get yourself into the rhythm. Remember how I said it's about what you know and just being comfortable with that? That's how you get comfortable in the teaching style. You just do it again and again. And eventually you don't need even the lecture notes. You just know everything by heart and you talk in your way where you're very comfortable with it and people respond to you. So I actually never read my reviews from that first class that I took, because it's like 5 years later, you're like, I'd be curious now to see what they said at the time, because I did get some positive feedback in that class. So some people do like that style, but essentially the point is it's just about doing it again and again and getting comfortable with it. So you find your rhythm. Like if you're naturally comfortable with public speaking, then just keep on doing what you're doing. But if you're not comfortable with public speaking, then use these tools to help make it easier on yourself. And then once you start knowing what you know, then at least in my case, I found I became a lot more comfortable in that waiting aspect. So it's practice, 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 essentially.
Well, and I think there's a good lesson in there too, just for anybody in those first couple of years after you graduate, of just you're going to be in situations that you weren't necessarily trained for. Were there skills that you learned at Grand Valley that helped you say, I think I can do that. I think I can figure this out.
So what I got most out of Grand Valley was creating a great community of people that I could talk to about situations and problems that I ran into. So think about public speaking, for example. I can think of, like, did I take any classes in public speaking at Grand Valley? Yeah, I did. I mean, that definitely helps. But the real skills really come from putting yourself out there, essentially putting yourself in those uncomfortable situations, those unfamiliar things that you might not necessarily be okay with doing at first, and just seeing how it is. I mean, the best advice is be okay with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, like those times where you were on set and you decided it wasn't for you. I mean, you still stuck it out at those 3 a.m. shoots for a bit, right?
Exactly. That's what college is for, like looking back specifically, because you find like what you are most comfortable with. And if you don't like a particular situation, that's okay. What we like to say also is this idea of fail faster, because you learn from failure. You learn about things that you don't like and things that you essentially aren't good at, or things that you want to further develop. And the more and more you do it, essentially, either you become more comfortable with it and you develop a skill in it, or you move on to something else that you are more passionate about.
That is a great lesson. I feel like I just learned something there, too. Going back to Exceptional Minds, the spectrum is a really important part of what you do there. What is it about animation, autism? Why is that the connection that everybody made there?
You know, everybody has recently been asking me that. I want to say that's more like a human psychology question, because there is something really appealing about the animated form. Maybe it's because you're putting yourself into situations that are so fantastical and impossible, and there's something about being out of the ordinary in animation. So something becomes this very fantastical event. There might be reasons behind it in the sense of society doesn't accept me, but maybe this other world will accept me.
I think a lot of us in filmmaking relate to that, even if we're not on the spectrum or don't know that we are.
More than likely, a lot of people who you interact with in the arts, more than likely met people who are on the spectrum, and they either just don't disclose or don't identify. Some people don't get diagnosed until later in life. In my opinion, it's out there a lot more than we vocalize it being there. But like anything that there's a social stigma, it's up to the individual to you specifically, whether or not they are on the spectrum or not, because it's about their own personal life journey and what their goals are for themselves.
Certainly. And I imagine some of the people listening to this could be on the spectrum looking for some connection, some community. There's a lot of hope in Exceptional Minds. Can you just talk to us about creating that community, that sense of hope?
So one of the great things about, again, our 3-year program, not only do we have the education, but we do have extracurriculars that go along with that. So these extra social engagements, we do a certain amount of parties where the students come together, they'll have pizza, engaging games, things of that nature. But one of the great things that we do on a weekly basis is we have a movie or game night, and the students flip out for movie and game nights. So last week, they just watched the original, the 1993 Super Mario Brothers
movie. Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course, the new Mario movie. And they were doing, it's like, oh, this is going to be bad movie night. And like, I love the 1993 film, so that's just what it's. But of course, they're like, okay, this really doesn't seem like a Mario movie, but this is actually a really cool dystopian movie. So sometimes you'll get these fun interactive reactions that they weren't necessarily expecting. They go all in on the game night. They'll compete against each other in Super Smash Brothers or Mario Party. And us as administrators and instructors will overview them. Just sometimes we'll get involved in the gameplay, but it's just a really great collaborative space for them to come together do that type of interaction. So one really awesome thing that we just did recently at the end of March is we had what is called an Anna Jam. We have 48-hour Anna Jam.
Anna Jam?
So what that is, within 48 hours, you get into teams and you produce animation within that 48-hour period. So there's 24-hour competitions that are out there that happen year-round specifically, but we decided we're going to do our own. So that was just another great way to interact, produce some animation work, get to know their peers a little bit better, have that type of interaction to really build that sense of community right there. Lots of cool things of that nature happening at Exceptional Minds. So instructors were there like at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was there only during the day because, like I said, in my old age, I'm like, no, I don't do the free anyone there. And for those of you who are wondering, I'm actually 37, so I'm not so just semi-old.
So outside of Exceptional Minds, just general industry tips for students on the spectrum or recent graduates on the spectrum, what do you tell your students when they go out into the world?
General tips I can give you would come back to what do you want your brand to be? And so what that comes down to, although we want to think, hey, I'm going to be the best at this, I'm going to be your top level Disney animator or Pixar artist, take a step back. Think about this. Do you want to destroy your self-worth of putting yourself at that level? Now, for the 10,000 people, that may be the way to go.
What do you mean by destroy your self-worth?
What I mean by that is, are you going to make yourself sick specifically by being like, I'm technically not good at enough to do this?
Work-life balance?
Essentially, and then putting yourself all into it in that way. So that comes back to the point of develop a style for yourself. Have an artistic voice that's unique to you. That is what's going to get you noticed. So you present yourself in a certain way, a certain theme. Maybe you're all about goth and horror. Maybe you're about sci-fi. Maybe there's something crazy and wonky out there that's your style. Maybe things in regards to, like, look at something like Rick and Morty, adult humor animation, right? But it has this very distinct style. Do you have a voice that's like that? Do you borrow themes of that nature to make yourself more appealing to a wider audience? And that's why I used that as that specific example. You develop a website, a cover letter, a portfolio that reflects your brand, what you're all about, whether it's raunchy or by the book, but something that really defines you. Not everybody's going to respond to you. But a lot of people will. That's being true to yourself, because those are the people who you're going to have the commonalities. And by showing your voice, your vision in that way and form, then you can make those connections, put yourself out there in a way where people are going to recognize you for the talents that you have, artistic, technically. They'll get where you want to go in the end. Always be true to you and you won't go wrong.
This episode is brought to you by the Chuck Peterson Memorial Fellowship. The fellowship was established by Chuck Peterson's family and friends to assist upper-level students in the film and video program at GVSU who were working on creative projects that support the nonprofit sector in their community. Kyle Machime, the 2020 recipient of that fellowship, describes the benefits of the support he received.
When going through this fellowship, there are three separate parts of yourself that I think get to experience a lot of development. The first is as a student, because this is a learning process. You get to learn how to work with a client on your own, independently out in the world, away from the classroom, like you would in something like producing for clients. And the second one would be as a video maker, as a video producer, as someone who has respect for the work that they're doing and wants to improve on themselves and produce a final product that can be used out in the real world. And then the third one would be as a citizen. You know, you're not making video for an entertainment value or for some kind of commercial purpose. It's for a nonprofit. It's for a direct benefit in your community. And being a citizen of that community, understanding how you can directly impact and improve it, is a really valuable experience that I think the fellowship teaches you to be as a student, as a filmmaker, and as a citizen. All three of those things are directly a part of this process that you get to learn and ask yourself, how do I want to be seen and how do I want to act as these three roles?
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show. So you brought up work-life balance, and I'm curious what that looks like between school or going out into the industry. And you all are doing professional work on these big movies, I assume, with pretty hefty deadlines. What does work-life balance look like? What tips do you have for that?
So school, we teach that actually in our vocational part of our curriculum. Another unique thing about the social minds curriculum is we spend one day a week tours. This is how I prepare for a job interview. This is how I solve workplace conflicts. This is how I prepare a cover letter. This is how I prepare a resume. This is how I build a portfolio specifically. Mm. What that ties into is having those soft skills, those professional skills, going back to your original question about that work-life balance, you had to be able to regulate and recognize, okay, I'm burnt out. I need to take my break. I'm going to resume this. I'm going to do this in chunks so I can get a certain amount done. So a lot of the time in the VFX industry, we do run into the issues and the animation industry where, hey, people will be working these massive amounts of overtime getting a certain job done. If you're going to go into the industry, will you run into times where that's unavoidable? Yes. You want to keep your sanity as much as possible and only do that when it's absolutely necessary, because there will be times in your life where you won't have a choice, unfortunately. But when you do have the choice, allow yourself to take a step back, solving that technical problem, that artistic problem. If you're getting stuck on progressing in your art, give it a few days, come back to it, look at it from a different perspective so you can keep moving along. Yeah. So ultimately, in the end, maintain work-life balance when you're a company breathing down at you saying like, hey, we have a deadline at 5 o'clock tomorrow. At that point, you have to stay overnight. That's just the reality of this industry. Now, when that's not happening, though, take time to learn, ramp yourself up, and develop those additional skills, because there will be those downtimes.
Certainly. What does that look like for people who are neurodivergent? Is that the same process?
Yeah, it would be. So the workplace, this would come down to what potential accommodations you can provide to them. So for example, if a neurodivergent person is working on the details, somebody on the spectrum, and they're having a hard time concentrating, you might just want to check in with them, make sure like, hey, is this space quiet enough? If it's not, then will headphones solve that problem? Or is there another available space in our facility that you could work that's a little bit quieter than this space? Those are small things, but things that can really help a person concentrate and get the work done that they need to get done.
Very good. Since 2004, you've been doing animation, you've been doing special effects work. How have you seen technology change, techniques change in your career?
So technology, the technicalities, the software's always changing, always. Techniques stay the same. Basic traditional techniques, like drawing techniques, are still very much the same. So you'll see a lot of that same similarity. The software you use, you might be introduced to a new technique or concept in it based on what we're seeing in the industry. So one of the very popular things that we're seeing is puppet animation and motion graphics. So you'll have a pre-existing character that animates across the screen. So opposed to drawing out the character, you're going to animate with a rig in either an After Effects system, such as the Duik system, or you're going to use Toon Boom Harmony and animate with their rig. So those type of functions may change over time. And we do see a lot of those techniques evolving to make things more user-friendly for people and more accessible. But the overall concepts stay the same.
You've seen this change happen. For students who are in class right now, how can they prepare themselves for an industry that's always changing?
So definitely keeping those traditional principles in mind, whether it be design principles, if you're doing more motion graphics related work, if you're doing visual effects work, those basic visual effects concepts like tracking. But you're going to go online, you're going to Google, you're going to go on YouTube, you're going to keep up on those channels, you're going to keep up on your network specifically, and you're going to ask, hey, what are you seeing? We have also a thing called a program advisory committee. And so what that is, we have industry professionals who are out there actively working, who will come to us and communicate with us different things, trends based on this exact question. And they'll tell us specifically, hey, we're seeing software going this way, or we're seeing more of this happening right now. So we have this constant communication going on to see like, hey, are we still putting the right things into our curriculum for what's going on in the industry, or are we outdated? So Exceptional Minds is not accredited. What that allows for is allows us to basically change our curriculum on the fly if we need to. And our instructors are amazing at developing new curriculum all the time based on what we're seeing happening in the industry.
So you've went to school in the Midwest, you've worked in New York, worked in LA. I'm always interested in how is the industry different coast to coast, or what is similar, New York, LA, Midwest?
Speed. New York is so, in my opinion, everybody's trying to one up one another. LA, you still have to get your work done, but people are much more understanding. Maybe it's the traffic mentality. You get traffic, so you get a few hours behind. But you have a lot of work to get through, but you can take a breather every now and then. Go back and understand and realize your life, heading back to that whole work-life balance discussion that is still available. That was just my personal experience. People have different experiences, but that was my overall view of that specifically. Michigan, for me, it's my home state. It's where I grew up. The speed of work, if I'm being completely honest, is a little bit slow for me there. Would I do it? Yeah, of course I would. But I don't know how I would feel about doing it long-term because I do like staying pretty consistently busy. That's just my perspective.
Sure, sure. Like working from home, so computers have gotten a lot more powerful now. Are people able to work from home, or are you still commuting in that LA traffic all the way to where you have to go if you're out there in the world?
We were offering virtual private lessons at Central Minds even before the pandemic hit. And then when it hit, we online a week with no problem. There we go. We're good to go. But by being a digital curriculum that's mostly based online, having those computers in that week, that's what we ended up doing mostly. We rented out a bunch of our computers that we had on site so people who didn't have the available equipment at home would have it specifically. It was a very easy transition for us. Now, that's not to say there were some growing pains at that time for us as a company. I think everybody went through that a little bit just because of the status the world was in specifically. A few people went on to other jobs and things of that nature just because there was such a dramatic change at that time.
Sure, yeah. So, when you were a freelancer, did you have your own editing equipment, or like, do students need to invest in those computers to be competitive?
A student should have at least a medium-grade computer to be competitive. It doesn't have to be a fancy $3,000 machine, but it should be something that has a decent amount of RAM. So in this day and age, something that's like 16 gigabytes, if you're doing 3D, things like the Adobe Suite, like Nuke, you can get non-commercial versions of it and practice on it if you're building your portfolio. So software is really not an issue for us. It really never has been because the companies basically are like, yeah, we'll absolutely help you out. And we're like, oh, you're so awesome. You're so great. Thank you for doing this.
Right.
And when we eventually came back in person, specifically, depending on the year and what's our budget, if we're talking about the company as a whole, that's when our equipment gets upgraded. But we do the best we can to keep pretty current so our students can keep up and be competitive in the industry. So, and we're always actively looking at that. One of the things that we definitely use is a bunch of Wacom equipment. So we have a bunch of tablets and Cintiq specifically that the students use in the classroom that are available to them on site. So that was a little bit of a struggle during COVID, but they were able to check out the tablets. I mean, there are certain things like having and the instructors being able to look over you directly, get that direct one-on-one support, do a little bit of that hand-holding when needed in person. That is more viable when the students are on site opposed to being remote. So there were positives to being online, but also part of our workshops are always online too. In fact, we have summer workshops coming up. The majority of them will still be online this year, and that's a great way to get involved with Exceptional Minds programming specifically for the first time if you're interested at all. So do a combination of both of them and continue to expand into this online realm. We have a really great in-person presence. It's a combination of both these things.
Right. I think we see that a lot across the industry for sure. What are you working on right now? I mean, what are the big projects? Can you even talk about them? Do you have just like NDAs across the whole spectrum?
Yeah, that I can't talk about specifically. I can say, yeah, we're definitely working on some Marvel stuff.
I can't tell you the titles.
Can you tell me what that work looks like? What are the jobs your students are helping? What do you see up on the screen?
Yeah, so if you're talking about visual effects, you're actually not going to see it because part of the thing with visual effects, they're what we call invisible effects. Often you won't notice something has changed. So while they may do a green screen replacement background, like I have in my background right here, I know this is a podcast, but for those of you at home, I have my Exceptional Minds logo on in the background, which is a form of green screen, essentially. But if there's like a wire in the shot or a boom mic, so our artists will go through a series of those shots and they'll remove those and make those better. those would be the invisible types of visual effects. So something that might be more concrete, we've done some work for Sesame Street. And so there you might see something that's a little bit more visually concrete because you're seeing some of the actual animation come to life. So that would be something that's very visually apparent. But if you're looking to see, hey, the exceptional lives that you work on this, read the end credits of the movies, really, to see who all the visual effects artists were.
Right, right. And so people are doing everything from just removing one little wire to creating a whole dragon, right? It's like across the visual effects is everything now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. My brain is spinning. Like, this is so interesting to me. Is there anything about Exceptional Minds that you want to talk about, or about your career, about being, you know, an educator, a filmmaker, that you want to touch on that we didn't ask about?
You've covered a lot of great questions, I think, today, just naturally through our discussion specifically. But yeah, you talked about this early on. It's really remembering, just because somebody is on the spectrum doesn't mean that they can't do a job, a function, or anything like that. It's really the antithesis of that. Sometimes need extra support in these very minor ways and fashions, usually to help them be the most successful that they can be. Because if we're looking at it from the scientific perspective, from the reading that I've done, what happens the brain when a person has autism specifically is extra neurons or extra pathways will go off specifically. So it's basically an information overload a little bit. So that's kind of a way. What the accommodations do is it helps that refocusing happen. And that's why I come back to that point of when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because the human brain is so unique and so complex. Everybody reacts to something different. Now, people who have high levels of anxiety and sometimes ADHD will also end up being, we'll see those commonalities for people who end up being on the spectrum. So there are those commonalities that still exist. But ultimately, you should just always ask yourself, or employers should ask themselves specifically, can this person just do the job that's out there? Can they do what's in front of them? And that's what it's all about, just like everybody else.
Do you see those accommodations and support happening out in the world?
It's happening more and more these days. That's something that we have constant discussions with the different employers about, is providing the support. And we see a lot more companies who have a lot more of these neurodiverse initiatives popping up. So this is a great time, but this is the most available time in the history since I've been alive, where if you're going to disclose and you're questioning about disclosing whether or not, and that would give you, could actually, those possibilities do exist. Now, it could do the opposite too, but I feel like in this day and age, people have a little bit of a better understanding of autism, where that stigma isn't as high right now, but it does still exist to a degree. So we're kind of walking this fine line right now. We're kind of like at this really borderline stage of acceptance / having the stigma like, oh, this is a right man who doesn't understand what I'm saying.
Sure, sure. And we're recording this in Autism Awareness Month, which even the fact that it exists hopefully shows that society as a whole is becoming more understanding and accepting. Yeah.
I mean, and some people will need higher support. So it's not always the case. And that's, again, coming back to that idea of you just have to take the time to interact with everybody on an individual basis to get to know their story and what they're about.
Hey, you're doing a great work out at Exceptional Minds. Hey, in the video on your website, notice one of the parents that are interviewed is somebody who we mostly know as an actor. Is that Jamie Lee Curtis? Does she have a student there?
Yeah, that's really funny because that video was made before I actually started there. So she was our graduation speaker, I believe, the year before I came to Exceptional Minds. Yeah, she gave the graduation speech. So we usually get like a celebrity. Year after year, we have a lot of different amazing people like that who potentially come in. There are two students right now who I can actively think of who actually have celebrity parents for those reasons.
Wow. Do you want to do some name dropping?
No, I can't.
We'll leave that to the listeners' imagination.
That's the funny thing about LA, because like the celebrity thing happens every now and then, and it's just kind of like, oh, sometimes you'll be starstruck, and then other times it's like, oh yeah, it's LA, so it's expected.
Sure, you got a lot to be proud of. I always like to end the podcast with something that you're, you know, a problem that you've solved, something that you're really most proud of, or something that pops into your head, something that you overcame or solved. Do you have any good stories to sign us off on?
This is where being a teacher comes back into place. Because, you know, I am the academic dean. At my core, I love to teach, even though I tell you these stories. I was terrified at first. It is that gratification that the students, well, that's what it comes down to. As an educator, specifically when I taught Nuke visual effects, it's when they had that aha moment and I saw, okay, they got it now and they can create this amazing world projects that always made me feel incredible. Now it's like, you're getting your demo reel done. It's at the pristine stage that it needs to be. Awesome. You can be competitive in the industry now. Go out there, make us proud in the world. So that's the most fulfilling thing for me.
That's great. Well, Tim Daly from Exceptional Minds, the Academic Dean of Exceptional Minds, thank you so much for hanging out here on Alumni Live.
Absolutely. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.